Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is our hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So I want to welcome everyone who is listening. A very happy new year. Very sadly, Misty Hall will not be with us this evening, but she will be back with us next week. And for that reason, we're going to have a very shortened show. I am going to give people the call-in number in case you would like to talk. If you have any issues you would like to discuss or you questions you'd like to bring up to me. But otherwise, I'm just going to mention a few things, and then we're going to end the show for tonight. The call-in number here, if you have a pencil, is area code 646-716-4893. I'll mention that again. It's area code 646-716-4893. So if you have any questions or like to have a conversation or let other people know how you feel, please feel free to call in and I'll be happy to have that conversation with you. First of all, as I mentioned before, I'd like to wish all of our listeners a very happy, healthy, and peaceful new year. This is the year of resolution or the time of the year for resolutions. And I was telling some of the wonderful women who come to my chat room just a few moments ago that now I have a new resolution. And this is one that I never thought I would ever say to anyone. But here's what it is. For this upcoming year, it's going to be all about me. Yep, I'm going to become number one in my thoughts, and I'm going to make it about me, 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 as someone in our group said, and I think that's absolutely right. Because I've spent so many of my years just making it about everybody else. And now that I've hit the new age of 60 this past year, I really am looking at life differently, and I feel there has to be a win in here for me. And so I'm going to put my needs first, like so many other people put their needs first. And I think that that's a really good resolution for everyone. I know that usually we make these resolutions like I'm going to quit eating, I'm going to go on a diet, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to be a better mother, I'm going to do more productive things. You know, we make these broad sweeping generalizations and we all mean well, but the one thing that we really leave out is the importance of doing for us and putting ourselves first, because as a straight wife, we are so used to never putting ourselves first. Our needs usually and most likely do come last. So this is an opportunity for you to rework this year for you. And I think sometimes it's just repeating it over and over again. You have to say it and make it a mantra that this year is for me. This year is for me. And I do know that this year really will be for me because I do have a new attitude. And in some of our upcoming shows, I'll be speaking about that new attitude. But for right now, I would like to share an article with you. And I found this article very interesting. One of my readers sent it to me, and it's called Why Do Gay Men Marry Women? And if you would like a copy of this article, then please send me a note to my email address at bonk@aol.com. And this was written by Paul Kogan from Toronto's Lesbian and Gay, LGBT Parenting Examiner. And I think it's very interesting. It says, I remember, and this article just came out, it says, I remember soon after my divorce, I was sitting in my local Tom Hortons coffee shop when Mark, one of my Toronto gay friends, asked me, how could you be gay and still marry a woman? Mark's judging voice and demeanor immediately put me on the defensive. I remember thinking just how little Toronto gay men are really understand about why gay men marry women. But I also don't think I had a really good answer to his question either. Mark was 28 and just getting married to his gay partner of 10 years. I was considerably older than Mark with more actual lived gay experience than he at this time, and his question also made me feel sad for how so little is known about this subject. Now, I have some answers based on what we know from psychological research regarding this topic. An article from Czechoslovakia in 1965 discouraged gay men from marrying women because most would fail. Another researcher reported in 1971 that back then, marriage counselors in Belgium, who were mostly drawn from the priesthood, also strongly dissuaded gay men from marrying. Despite such cautions, studies conducted in the U.S., the Netherlands, Denmark, and West Germany have reported about 20% of gay men have been married heterosexually at least once. Why does this happen, and why does it still occur? There are several reasons provided by researchers who have studied this topic by finding out from gay men who have had this experience. The main reasons include internalized homophobia around the time of marriage, belief that there would be negative societal reactions to being gay. It seemed natural. Having family-centered values and or desire for children and a family life. They were in love. Belief that marriage would eliminate homosexual desire. Perceptions that there is a lack of intimacy in the gay world and social and family pressure to marry. Other reasons less commonly cited, heard by Mark and a number of my gay friends who went down this road for their getting married were: A, the wife had become pregnant. B, pressure from a girlfriend. Excuse me one second. And C, everyone else was getting married. D, acting on advice from a doctor or priest. And E, work-related reasons. And F, loneliness. There are certain cultural, societal, and or religious reasons that also explain why a number of my gay Toronto friends married women. For example, Jerry, a recently divorced father of three children, said, "Getting married was an expectation in my Muslim country, not to mention that homosexual behavior is punishable by death in my country. Some religions, such as Orthodox Judaism, fundamentalist Christianity, and Islamic faiths, are opposed to the same gender behavior." Samuel, a 45-year-old Orthodox Jewish friend, and single father parenting his son, told me opposite gender behavior was the only viable alternative for him for most of his married life. The general consensus among all the friends I have is that most mixed orientation marriages will eventually end in divorce, but it is understood that some mixed marriages do, in fact, survive. Many admit that most of these marriages are sexless, mind you, and sexual problems are common within these marriages as well. All friends admitted that expecting heterosexually married gay men to abstain from having sex with other men is just often very futile. As few as these men will keep these agreements. From personal experience, for these mixed orientation marriages to work, it is usually necessary that the couple reach a mutual agreement to allow the husband to have extramarital sex with other men. Other critical ingredients for success include honesty, open communication, receiving support from peers, receiving counseling, and also taking time to decide what is right for the marriage. In effect, the gay husband needs to be empathetic to his wife, and the straight wife needs to be flexible. A study of some gay men married in the Philippines suggested that men did not see their homosexuality as having any effect on their ability to fulfill family responsibilities, with one exception. Their sexual relationships with their wives, if they still were occurring, were negatively affected. I have found that it is often surprising to many heterosexual and queer individuals alike to find out that most gay men are capable of having sex with women. Sexual behavior can be engaged in for many reasons, and sexual desire is not required for men to become erect or to ejaculate. Bodies are bodies. They respond to physical stimulation, whatever might be causing it, like what happens when a man goes jogs without underwear. Yum. As I see it, it is unfortunately straight women who often end up having to sacrifice the most when mixed orientation marriages do occur. Having sex is an important part of marriage, and when it is less than satisfying or non-existent, it creates a strain for most people who have an active sex drive. Most women have a hard time letting their husbands be sexual with someone else, whether male or female. To do this successfully, the woman is going to have to think more like most men. By this, I mean they will need to clearly separate love and sex. Furthermore, and also sadly, I might add, some gay men are going to fall in love with another man. Then the situation becomes especially difficult for husband and wife. And that was the article, and that came out just a few days ago, January 3rd, it came out a year ago. I just received it a few days ago, but it's from January 3rd, 2011. But I think this article really says some important things for our women who are listening. First of all, when he discusses the fact that gay men can have sex with a woman, because if you stimulate a man, it doesn't necessarily have to do with anything, it's just a sexual act. And also, he really does discuss how the women really are affected more so than the men. I think that Falk Hogan brings out some good points also, that women who stay in these marriages have to make adjustments. They have to be what he calls flexible. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with any of his points. I'm just saying that I understand what he's saying. And that's my whole point. If a woman can't be flexible, meaning that she can't approve of her husband disappearing to have sex with another man, she can't feel that this is her failure, because this is not the way that almost all the women I have ever met ever want to live. I think that women have a very hard time accepting the fact that their husbands are going to want to go and have sex with a man and be able to live with it. In fact, I don't know very many women at all who are happy to live with that or want to live with it. Now, some women are stuck because, you know, they've been living in a bad situation for a long time, and they really do get stuck in the muck, as I call it, where they're living with a gay man, and they just finally get to the point where they keep bargaining and bargaining, well, maybe if I don't bother him or I allow it to happen, you know, maybe he'll stay with me. And in fact, I did have a letter this week from one woman, and it was like a really sad letter to me. And, you know, I get many letters each day, and some of them are just more upsetting to me than others. But this letter was really upsetting to me because in the letter, the woman said to me directly, she said, you know, I'm thinking to myself, maybe if I just let him go out and have sex with men, maybe he'll keep loving me. And when women say this, I'm thinking to myself, there's something wrong here. And I always say that homosexuality is not about infidelity. It's about sexuality. So it's not just about sex. It's about living with someone who's living a lie. And then all of a sudden, you're put in the situation of living the lie with him. And there is just no way that any woman I know can ever feel good about herself if she allows this to happen in a marriage. And if you would like to call in and give me your opinion at area code 646-716-4893, I'd be happy to hear from you. I know that many of our women are listening to this broadcast after the fact, you know, because you can't listen while it's live, so you won't be able to call in, but if you would like to call in and you're listening live, I'd be more than happy to hear from you. So that was pretty much, like I say, a pretty disturbing article in the sense that it really tells things as they are in certain ways, and it's like a wake-up reality call for women who keep thinking they can make these marriages work. I just want to remind every one of our listeners also that I'm going to be going to Texas on March 2nd through the March 4th for a retreat in Texas, and we are going to have some really dynamite women joining us there. This is one get-together. Well, I'm always excited about meeting straight wives, but this is one more get-together that I'm really excited about because we're going to have a really wonderful list of people coming to join us, including Patsy Ray Dawson, who is a Christian counselor, who will talk scripturally why it's fine to get divorced from a gay man. And we'll also have a dear friend of mine, Deborah Thomas Brown, who works with women who are Caribbean and minority women in South Florida. And also my wonderful friend Wendy, the author of Wendy's List, and I reprint Wendy's List in my newsletters too, and you know, every place I can spread those lists and let women know what they can expect when they first find out about their husbands on the journey ahead. And that's a journey where your emotions change from time to time. You think you have it down, you think you understand the situation, and you think you're ready to, you know, deal with it, but then when you have to, it really just breaks you apart. So Wendy will be joining us and some other wonderful friends who are part of my support network. We have a wonderful retreat where we're staying. You know, it's a retreat spa, and the cost is $85 a day. They gave us a very, very special rate, and it's right on the water. Breakfast is included. So if you would like to be a guest with me, and really it's going to be a healing weekend, being able to get together with other women, sit and learn from them, learn from their experiences, and feel connected. And that's really what this is about. It's about feeling connected, because when you're going through this, so many of us feel disconnected. And my goal is to make women, you know, feel that they're not the only ones who are going through this, that this is something that happens to millions of women. And as I mentioned, you may not believe it at the time that you're going through it. You may feel like you're the only one, but you're far from it. Once again, there are women who have gone through this for years and years, and they're every place you can find them. You know, it's not like when I first, you know, found out about my ex-husband and there was no help around. Today there's lots of help around, and people are able to get the kind of help that they need with this. So I think that, you know, it's wonderful today that there are sources where you can go to for support. So that's going to be our get-together, and that's coming up in the first weekend in March. And if you are interested in it, you can just give me a call at write me a note at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to get you set up, you know, for that retreat. And also we'll be getting together more often in the New York area. And so if anybody is in the New York, New Jersey area, please feel free to get in touch with me also. And I'll let you know about our next, you know, meeting. That'll be sometime in the spring. So that's about it for tonight. Since nobody's called in, I'm going to cut the show short. We do have a caller. Hold on just one moment. Let's see who it is. Good evening. This is Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie. It's Donna.
Hi, Donna. Can you turn down your computer?
Oh, turn it on?
No, turn it down.
Turn it down. Okay, let me just see if I can do that. I'm not a computer literate person. Oh, just maybe turn the sound off, maybe? Would that be okay?
Sound off. That's perfect.
Okay,
otherwise, it echoes back at us.
Okay, yeah.
Well, Donna, how are you?
I'm doing okay tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm glad
to
be talking to you on air.
Thank you for calling in and saving the show for a little bit longer.
You're welcome. My pleasure. For all you do, it's not a problem.
Thanks, Donna. Donna's one of our newer support group members who's just a wonderful woman. I had the wonderful opportunity of meeting you in New York.
It was a pleasure. It really was great to meet other women going through the same thing.
Yes, and you know what? Donna is not only a beautiful woman on the outside, but I mean, she's also beautiful on the inside. But, you know, Donna, when I meet women like you, it's funny. You know, I always talk about self-esteem issues and how you feel. And, of course, I fought for my self-esteem for most of my life, you know, because I thought I was never that pretty or I was always overweight. And, you know, I always had those issues that I felt, boy, if I could ever look like, like you, Donna.
And meanwhile, I have my own self-esteem issues, so go figure. And you're a beautiful woman, too, so both inside and out.
Oh, thank you. But that's the thing I've learned, you know, through all these years. And I always tell people, if I would have the opportunity to spend 10 years of my life doing whatever I want, I would spend it trying to understand what builds self-esteem and makes self-esteem. And once again, you're half my age now, so, you know, you're a young, beautiful woman. And like I say, when I tell people beautiful, like of model quality, you really are.
Oh, stop. Thank you. But I don't always feel that way, but I appreciate that.
No, but it's true. And And I think to myself, you know, this could happen to you. It could happen to anybody. You know, it's not about what you look like. It's not about how you, you know, are. It doesn't matter how smart you are. you know, this happens to everybody across the board.
And I'm trying to just figure out, you know, right now, just how did I get myself into that situation so I could just move forward, you know?
And it's true. And I think that's such a good move because a lot of women, they don't deal with it. You know, they say, well, it's over, let me move on. And then if you don't change anything inside, it repeats itself over and over again.
Yes.
And it's funny, I have a wonderful friend through this network. She's like a niece to me, you know, who's about your age.
Okay.
And she's professional, and she's beautiful also. You know, she can stop people while she's walking down the street. Also, you know, really beautiful, and yet she's going through the same issue. And she's been to a number of our support meetings and retreats. And she did make the mistake and jumped too fast. And sometimes I think it's hard when you come out of these relationships because you want to feel like you're really a woman. You know,
right.
You want to feel like you're validated as a person. You want to see that you're not so sexually defective like your gay husband makes you feel. And
right.
So many women feel that need to run out and meet a man and have a relationship.
Yeah, I know I'm not ready yet. I know I have to give myself time because I'll end up with someone, maybe not gay, but someone who's not what I'm looking for. Let's put it that way.
Right. And I really feel that men who, you know, have issues can find women who are weak in this area.
Yeah, I don't think you think that, but I do feel like you give out vibes and they catch on to it right away and hook right on to you.
Exactly. These guys, like I say, they're predators. They're like vultures flying overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And they can sense when women are weak, even if you don't feel like you are. But, you know, if you haven't recovered from the gay husband, you know, situation, you haven't totally mentally, you know, repaired yourself. And you're not going to be in a strong position, and you are going to make a mistake again. And that's what happened to this young lady who I'm referring to from our support network. You know, she waited a while, but after a few months she said to me, well, you know, I really miss having a man. First of all, you miss the time when you had a husband and
right.
He wasn't, like, you know, really being in a relationship with. So it's not just all of a sudden that you need to be with a man. You haven't been with one for years, even if you have a gay husband.
It's
so
true. You kind of were alone, and then now what happens is, you know, you have to learn how to be on your own for a little while. Even though it's scary, you have to spend time with yourself.
And that's so true, because I think if you don't, then you're willing to settle for any other kind of relationship. And
right, I know how I can get when I like really or am attracted to somebody. I know how I am. I end up, you know, especially if you have sex with the person, then you get attached to them, and whether they're good or not, you end up kind of sacrificing yourself just because you want that relationship.
And that's so true. And I think that's where men and women are really different.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, men can have sex and it really doesn't have to mean anything to them. But with us, if we make love to a man, we're expecting to have a future with him.
Right.
You know, we're counting our eggs long before they're hatched, and we get hung up and we get attached and we have expectations and we're usually very disappointed. Have you seen that happen with other friends you have?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, it's happened to me many a times growing up and, you know, dating. And before I met my gay husband, I would hope for the relationship. And then a lot of times it wouldn't come and I'd be very disappointed and depressed and feel worse about myself. So it became like an endless cycle.
Yeah, I think it's like a self-fulfilling, you know, what do they call them? It's a perpetuated, you know, situation. Self-fulfilling prophecy that
yeah.
You know, we get hung up in. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that many of us, as I always say, and it's not an insult to anyone, it's just a reality, we're fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not going into the new relationships, you know, being very strong. We weren't very strong when we went into these relationships to start with because we wouldn't have stayed with them if we were.
Right. So I would have left a long time ago.
Exactly. How long were you in your marriage?
Well, I was married 11 years, was together with him 15 years.
And that's a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your whole adult life practically.
Yeah, my childbearing years as well. I have no children.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that to deal with, but I'm getting better with it. I'm accepting it more. And you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. You know, I can't, I don't know what God's plan is for me, so I'm going to let it go to him and hope for the best. You know, I can't rely on that.
Right. But
you know.
You do feel cheated.
You do.
You know,
you do.
These marriages with expectations that I think are very normal expectations for all couples.
Yeah, you do. You feel like you've been gypped, you know. Everyone else gets that, and then you don't, you know. That kind of feeling.
Exactly. And did people think you were, like, the perfect couple by any chance?
Yes. We were the model couple.
Mm-hmm.
On the outside, but at home it was a different story. I guess if you asked anybody, it would be my fault, everything, and I'm, you know, the bad person. And look at,
mm-hmm.
the, you know, this guy, he's such a good person. How could you do this to him? And you know, I could just imagine, you know, I know his family is definitely feeling that way. You know, and it was a facade, and I couldn't take it anymore.
And I think a lot of that is because these guys are such good actors. And
yeah.
Every day they play that role.
Yes, and he was so helpful, and he did everything for my family. So he tried to compensate for his inability to have sex and all his other, you know, issues going on, and by just doing things, being a provider or being, you know, there in other ways. But that
about by keeping everything very busy.
Very.
You know, I find a lot of these men do a lot of busy stuff just to keep you from focusing on what the real problem in the marriage is.
Right, and rescuing my family, like they had issues, so he'd always be on the rescue for that. So it would always be about everyone else's issues and not dealing, you know, with what was going on in the house.
Yep, that's how mine was also. And I find that, you know, and I think you know also by now that so many of our women are really the helpers in life. You know, we're the people pleasers, we're always trying to make things right. And
yeah.
Especially when we feel so powerless to make them right within our own marriage. You know, we never know why we can't make that right. You know,
right.
We can help everybody in the world, but we can't make our husbands happy. And
yeah.
I think really big feeling of frustration for many of us, what are we doing wrong? And we internalize blame that they're externalizing and giving to us.
Right,
and
you're just agreeing with what they're saying. You know, it's all your fault, and you're like, oh yeah, it must be my fault. You know, I can't get this right. You know, I'm not either attractive enough, or you know, I'm who knows? It could be anything. You just tell yourself all of these things, and it becomes just a mental block, and you can't get free from it. It's very hard to get free. I mean, you can get free from it, and I'm really working hard on that. You know, you really have to kind of deprogram yourself.
It's true because, you know, we hear so many negative marriages messages throughout our marriages. Like mine always used to tell me, well, you're never going to find anybody who will love you as much as I do.
Oh, yeah. I heard that one.
Heard that one, too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, no one's going to love you as much as I love you. And I says, well, I don't really want that kind of love. You know, I had to get to that point where, you know, if that's the love you're going to give me, I really don't need that. You know, that's not what I'm looking for.
And I used to say that love is just another four-letter word to me. It doesn't have any meaning in this relationship.
Right.
I don't need somebody to love me the way that you love me. I need somebody to love me differently.
Right. I agree. I definitely agree with that. You know, I'm starting to see that now. As I'm away from him and, you know, spending time on my own, and, you know, of course you have your hard days and you go on your roller coaster ride up and down, but eventually a little bit the sky starts to clear a little bit, you know, at a time. You start realizing what's been going on and how it's been affecting you and that you deserve better. I mean, it takes a lot of work, but you can get there.
Exactly, but I think you know, you have to really work on it. And I
hard.
Think that's the problem that so many women have. You know, it's just easier feeling, well, I can skip that step and move on. But I
yeah.
see that in almost every case that's really destructive.
I agree.
Because you're going to be willing to, quote, settle again, and you're going to have different kinds of problems. It may not be sexual problems, but it will be other kinds of problems. And that's why I say these men can spot us, they can smell it, they can say, there's a good woman who I can manipulate around, and then you're bound to attract these men who are either narcissists, control freaks, they have passive-aggressive behavior,
mm-hmm.
they know how to manipulate you.
Yeah.
Do you think your husband had any of those characters?
I'm sorry?
Do you think your husband had any of those characters?
I think passive-aggressive. He wouldn't show his emotion or anger, but would come out in other ways. But he would kind of, because he didn't want to bring up any issues, would try to be everything's fine all the time, you know, not show any anger. But of course, it came out eventually when I confronted him. That different side of him definitely came out. And I also believe he's narcissistic because he was only thinking about himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I definitely feel that.
Let me just read you a few things about passive-aggressive behavior and see if you agree with this. It says that passive-aggressive behavior is a form of covert abuse. When someone hits you or yells at you, you know that you've been abused. It is obvious and easily identified. Covert abuse is subtle and veiled or disguised by actions that appear to be normal, at times even loving and caring. The passive-aggressive person is a master at covert abuse. Passive-aggressive behavior stems from the inability to express anger in a healthy way. A person's feelings may be so repressed that they don't even realize they are angry or feeling resentment. A passive-aggressive can drive people around him or her crazy and seem sincerely dismayed when confronted with their behavior. Due to their lack of insight into their feelings, the passive-aggressive often feels that others misunderstand them or are holding them to unreasonable standards if they are confronted about their behavior. So here are just some of the behaviors, and tell me if you went through any of these. One is ambiguity, and it says, I think of the proverbs, actions speak louder than words when it comes to the passive-aggressive and how ambiguous they can be. They rarely mean what they say or say what they mean. The best judge of how a passive-aggressive feels about an issue is how they act. Normally, they don't act until they've caused some kind of stress by their ambiguous way of communicating. Does that happen to you?
Basically, I feel like the communication was just pretty much gone. It would be more like it became where we weren't barely speaking to each other at a certain point because we both knew something was going on, and it just because we couldn't talk about it or I wasn't ready to talk about it, it would just be we'd sit in silence and or just a lot of denial. Nothing's going on, and I feel like I was becoming passive-aggressive because I would, you know, show my anger at the situation by maybe, you know, slamming things or, you know, being curt or, you know, you end up becoming, you know, the monster kind of because you can't pretty much
can't
say what you want to say.
How about this? It says blaming. They are never responsible for their actions.
Yeah,
if you
that's
aren't
him.
Then it is something that happened at work, the traffic on the way home, or the slow clerk at the convenience store. The passive-aggressive has no faults. It's everyone around him who has faults, and they must be punished for those faults. Was he anything like that?
Well, nothing would be his fault. Not so much punishing, but he would always, you know, play things off on somebody else. You know, it's the, you know, I'm the perfect one kind of. That's what he was acting like. You know, you know, I'm an angel. You know, he can be wrong about anything. You know, and that's it's really amazing. You know, I mean, I could be stubborn myself, but at least I have insight into myself, and I'm in reality, and I could say, all right, you know, I did this or whatever. But he never did anything. You know, oh, I didn't raise my voice. Oh, I didn't, like little things. He didn't do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became where you felt like, or I know I felt like I was losing my mind because I know he did certain things and I was being told that it wasn't happening, you know, even the little things, you know, and, you know, after a while you question, you know, your sanity.
Well, here's another one that, see, this is why I say if you don't recover and understand what's going on, you can fall right into this, and this doesn't have to do with being gay, because this is on a list not from gay men, just from, you know, people in general.
Right.
This is fear of intimacy. The passive-aggressive often can't trust. Because of this, they guard themselves against becoming intimately attached to someone. A passive-aggressive will have sex with you, but they rarely make love to you. If they feel themselves becoming attached, they may punish you by withholding sex. And I know that, you know, that happens to women all the time, I mean, because they have gay husbands, but once again, if you don't fix who you are, you could find this with a straight man. It's just not with gay men. It's men who have emotional disturbances as well.
Right. That's why you have to fix your intimacy issues so that you can find someone to be willing and open to have a relationship with someone that does want intimacy. You know, there's a lot of guys out there who'll block out the intimacy in different ways, whether it be anger, abuse, whatever, you know. And I know that's definitely an issue in my life, and that's something that I'm working on, that I need to be able to receive that kind of love. And I think right now the only way to do that is to love myself, and then that way I expect someone to treat me better.
Well, I think that's the best advice that you can give anyone, Donna, because if you don't love yourself, you're never going to be able to be in a healthy relationship.
There's no way. You're going to find somebody that agrees with you that, you know, you're not lovable, and they're going to treat you that way, and that's it. You're going to continue to feel you're more unlovable, until you're into that muck, like you say, and it's very difficult to get out. Not impossible, but difficult.
Exactly. And I think that's why so many of our women fall into bad patterns in general, because they just don't take the time to do what you're doing, and that's to really, you know, go through the steps. Do you feel that support has been important to you through this ordeal?
Absolutely. You know, it took me a while. I got your books, which were excellent, by the way. I mean, I started taking my notes and seeing the similarities, the patterns, and that helped strengthen me and to build my case, you know, kind of make it that, you know, I knew what was going on. So after that point, it took a little while, and I wanted to join, you know, the chat groups, because I needed to be with people that were going through the same thing. I'm in therapy, but you can't, and also a divorce support group, you can't. They don't really understand the issue of being married to a gay man. It's, you know, you need to be with people that have been through it to strengthen you. That way you don't feel like, you know, you're a freak.
Right. And, you know, I think that's true of almost any cause. You know, unless you've gone through it, or any situation, unless you've gone through it, no matter how supportive people can be, and I guess, you know, the situation that I'll relate to is that I lost my daughter. It's been 10 years coming up. And she was 22 at the time, and she was doing, you know, drugs and heroin, and that's how she passed away. And she tried. She really did. You know, we went through all these different rehabs and all these detox programs and recovery programs, and she would go for months and do good, and then all of a sudden, you know, it was back where it was. And after she passed away, you know, I really had to learn how to deal with that.
Right.
And I started a support group. And the reason I started it was because I went to a group that was for mothers who had lost children in general, and there were a lovely group of people called Compassionate Friends. And their children had died from all kinds of things, like drive-by shootings or car accidents. But it was for parents who lost children for any cause. So it was kind of like a AA or group or NA group or any kind of like 12-step group. You go around the room, you tell a little bit of your story and, you know, what happened to you. And people had very compelling stories. And when it came to me, you know, it was my first session there, I introduced myself and I told them a little bit about my situation. I had lost my daughter, you know, recently, and, you know, the trials and tribulations we went through with her drug problem.
Right.
And when the meeting was over, I had three women come up to me to speak to me, like, privately, and they said how much they admired what I said because they had lost their children from drugs, but they were afraid to say it.
Wow.
And I said, well, why would you be afraid to say that? Like, I just didn't get it. You know, you're sitting in a support group for people who lost children. What's the difference how you lost them? And all three of them told me the same thing. They said they don't view us here as the same, or children. They don't know that that's how we lost our children, but they said when somebody comes and says they lost their children to drugs, they feel, well, you're not really part of this group because of the, I mean, they don't say it, but they make you feel like it, that your child had a choice, our children didn't have a choice.
Right.
And they feel like we're not in the same, you know, situation. Their children were victims. Our children chose their own life to be this way. And I'm like, well, that's really sad. I mean, here you are coming to grieve, and you're not grieving because you're, you know, you didn't lose your child in the right way. I just didn't get that concept.
Right.
But for that reason, I did start a support group that lasted about 2 years, where we'd have weekly meetings from parents just who lost their children to drugs. And even though it was very heartbreaking and heart-wrenching for all of us to keep going through this, at least we felt connected.
At least
we felt that we understood each other and that people weren't looking down on us or criticizing or judging us on what kind of parent we were, because we were so down on ourselves already.
Right.
Because society looks at you like, what do you mean your kid was a drug addict? Weren't you around? Didn't you try to stop them?
Right.
You know,
I hear that
just,
all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's sad because unless you're in that person's shoes, you would never know what it's like. So you can't judge somebody.
I know. And, you know, the best thing I felt, you know, one time when I took my daughter down to Florida to do some rehabbing, and I got her into this beautiful program. And, you know, it was a very expensive program, but when you have a child who's what I thought was, you know, I considered a sickness, you try to do anything you can to try to save them.
Mm-hmm.
So when I had her in this program in Florida, what was just so amazing to me that one of her three roommates was the daughter of the police captain here in Philadelphia. And I was just so, like, amazed by that. And I thought, you know what? If it could happen to the police, you know, chief, then it could happen to me. You know, if it could happen
right.
to him, it could happen to anybody.
And that's healing because then you
it.
Don't feel by yourself, you know.
You don't. And you don't feel like you're such a failure when you see other people who have had this struggle. You know, it just cuts across all kinds of economic situations, religions, races. It affects everybody.
Right.
So the same thing with this, with having a gay husband, I think that people don't look at us the same when you go to a support group for divorce. That, you know, I think a lot of times people are very judgmental, thinking, what do you mean you didn't know he was gay?
Right, how could
you
not
know
that? Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I definitely agree, you know, and it's the same case. It's that, you know, you don't know what that person went through, and you weren't in that marriage, so how would you know, you know? And that's bottom line, and it's very damaging when people do that because you already have a low self-esteem. You don't
right.
need it to get any lower, and you need people around you that have been through it so that you can all build each other up.
Now, have you had any contact with his family since splitting up?
No. I'm actually, I just have nothing against his family. Like, I get along. His mom passed away, but his dad is still living and, you know, nice guy. And we weren't super close, but, you know, he's a quiet guy, you know, Italian family. And I just don't want to hear, like, anything. I think either they would try to talk me back in or what went wrong. I you know, he's not out of the closet, so I'm not going to say anything. I don't feel that that's my place to do so, and that's his journey. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'll let him go on his journey, and I'll be on mine, and I just hope they understand, you know. And if they don't, well, you know, again, they're not in my shoes. They don't know what really went down, you know, so I can't help that.
Now, does he blame you for the split up of the marriage?
I'm sorry?
Does your husband blame you for the splitting of your marriage?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's telling, well, he's, you know, he's telling me, you know, it's not the right thing. He's trying to use, you know, religion and, you know, it's wrong to divorce and all this stuff because he knows I'm trying to develop my spirituality. So he's used that against me and, you know, that hurt me. But I got past that because I had to decide that, you know, it's not right what he's doing. You know, let's talk about that. You know, let's not shine the mirror. You know, let's put it back on your face. And, you know, and I just know how he is and how he's the victim. And poor me. And, you know, my wife left me. I'm such a good person. And you know, his whole family sees him as such a good person, which he's not a bad person. You know, he helps a lot of people. He's a helper just like me. But he's got this issue that he's, you know, not willing to face. And no one knows about it. Or if they do, I don't know, you know.
And I think, you know, I don't know if you heard the article I was reading earlier.
I heard a bit of it, yes.
Yeah, I just thought it's amazing that some women are willing to continue living this way. You know, they make compromises in their own life. And
yeah, I feel bad for them. I feel really sad. I mean, I could see how it could happen, especially if you're not, let's say, financially independent or you have your worries, your insecurities, and you don't have support. You know, you could really put yourself into that box and never get out of the box. I mean, I can't imagine it because I know it was eventually going to turn into me going on medication because I really felt I was losing it. You know, I wasn't performing well in my job. I noticed changes in myself, depression, and then just I was tired of being sad, tired of being the investigator, trying to figure out what he's doing, and I just kind of lost myself.
Well, that's the whole problem with these marriages is that you get, you know, as I was saying to when I first started the broadcast, about my New Year's resolution being about me, me, me. That's what it's going to be like this year.
That's a good one.
Putting my first. But, you know, I think that when the longer you stay in these marriages, the more you lose yourself, as you're saying. And you don't even know who you are anymore to put yourself first. You know,
yeah.
You're supposed to be trying to make him love you in a way that he can't do. And you're so busy taking responsibility for something that's not within your control. And you're always trying to make something right that can never be right because, you know, these marriages are just mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about a mistake is that you can fix it.
Right.
Some women just are so afraid to take that step. And, you know, many times we've had on here guests and we talk about the children, how it affects them. And people say, well, I'm staying together because a divorce would be too upsetting to my children.
Yeah.
Well, it's not about upsetting your children. It's about setting a lifestyle role modeling for your children so that they don't do this again in their marriages. You know, they think that it's okay to accept this, you know, kind of life, as you see with you and your husband. And children think that they know that their parents are unhappy.
I think they do. I mean, I don't have children, so I can't say, but I know I come from a divorced family, and I know if, let's say, my mom stayed with my dad, who was an alcoholic, it would have definitely changed my life, you know, in a negative way, because children do hear, they do see, and they understand what's going on. I work with children, so I see the effect of children who have poor home lives, you know, they take it with them to school, and it's hard, but children definitely know more than you think they do.
And
they pick up on a lot.
Don't you agree that you can't hide something like happiness?
No, they know. They know when you're unhappy. And I think a lot of times kids put it on themselves that, oh, maybe I'm making mommy unhappy. You know, maybe, you know, I did something wrong. Even though I know that happens with divorce as well. But I think in time, if they see you're a stronger person, you're a good role model for them, especially, you know, if you're a mom for the little girls, and things eventually work themselves out. But you can't, you're living in denial, then you're going to show your children, okay, that's the way you should live. You should live in a world of denial and not live in any kind of truth. So that's a hard message to grow up with, and it's very damaging. I mean, while I can understand it's hard to leave, and it's hard for me, and I don't have any children, but I think in the long run, you would set a good example by showing them that you can make it on your own, and you're a strong person, and they can be strong as well.
That's so true, and I think that when children see their mothers are willing to settle, and there's no affection in the relationship, they don't see loving, they see they don't act like a couple. And they know what a couple should look like. They watch enough television and movies, and they see their friends' parents holding hands or being affectionate.
Right.
And there's none of that going on in their household. You know, they might think that that's just the way life is and settle for the same thing for themselves.
Right.
You know, we leave our children this legacy behind us of, you know, whatever they see we do, then they do. It's like when you see a child who has a mother being, you know, physically abused, then when it happens to her, she just thinks, well, I must have done something wrong like my mother did something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it must be me, and you're willing to accept that kind of behavior.
Right.
And that's what I try to impress on all women. You must be a role model to your children. And if you wouldn't want a situation for yourself, I always say, if you have a daughter, would you want her to be married to a husband like yours?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't have a daughter, if you have a sister or best friend?
And I remember when I spoke to you, Bonnie, you had told me that when I was questioning leaving my marriage, you said, if you know, would you want your sisters to be in that kind of relationship? And I said, no. And that really hit home with me because I really felt that way. I said, my God, no. So why don't I want that for myself? You know, that was the burning question there. You know, that's something that I had to think about.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so true. And that's why I tell it to everybody. If you wouldn't want your best friend or your sisters to live like this or your children, why do you want less for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, as I tell our women every week, I know it's hard to make it on your own if you've been living with somebody a long time. And even if you weren't thrilled in your marriage, Donna, I mean, if you don't have children, it's still a scary thing having to be on your own when you've been married for so long. Isn't that true?
It definitely is scary. It took me a little while to adjust. I think I'm coming through a breakthrough now where the sadness is starting to leave. I think I miss more him being around because I really didn't have a relationship with him. So
right.
I know some, you know, it really wasn't a real relationship. It was more of, I guess, the security with quotes around that word because it really wasn't that secure.
Well, just having another person with you, even if it's not the right relationship, you still have grown to be somewhat dependent on that person.
Yes, you do. But then once you start finding out you can do things on your own,
exactly.
And now I feel like I can breathe a little bit, actually. It's very refreshing. I feel like, okay, now that I stopped thinking and feeling guilty, which, you know, it's been taking me a while to get over that, because I never got full disclosure from him. So I blame myself, obviously, and that's something that you have to work through. But I just feel like I deserve better. I feel like I can breathe. I it's okay. He's not here, and I do get lonely sometimes, but then you have to just find something else to fill your time with. And you end up, if you can do that, you end up feeling like you're living again.
Well, you know, Donna, what I always say, that you can live with somebody and be more lonely than not living with someone.
Yes.
And that's how I felt. I felt even though this man is in this house, I'm still really lonely.
Yep, I felt the same way. And then I felt trapped because I'm not really doing anything to fix that and feeling bad about it and then dealing with the manipulation. So everything piled up is a big, big pile of manure, you know, and you get stuck in it.
And I think you brought up another really excellent point, and it's something that really saddens me also, and I talk about this from time to time. When you have to have women taking medication to stay in a relationship, there's something really wrong with that whole concept.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I totally agree. I said, oh, my God. I mean, I've had depression before and, you know, anxiety just from, you know, inherited issues with that. And, you know, I'm definitely working on that. But when I said I haven't taken anything for that for so many years, but now I'm thinking of taking the medication, I says, uh-uh.
Right.
That's something, that's a big red flag right there. I said, I'm not willing to be doped up so I can deal with this relationship.
Well, that's what it comes down to. I call it situational medication.
Mm-hmm.
That if you have to take medication to stay in a situation, then there's, I mean, I have nothing against medication if you need it for the right reasons.
Right.
But when you need it for the reason to live with somebody, there's something really wrong there.
Yeah.
And you have to take mind-altering drugs in order to cope with somebody, then that's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a problem you need to get rid of, no matter who it is.
And then it's true. You know, it becomes a game of survival. Either it's my mind or, you know, stay in this relationship because I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what, I'm going to deal with the fear. It's very scary, but it's doable. You know, it's not, you feel like it's going to be the end of the world because you're afraid. It's just like anything else that new that you try. It's jumping off, you know, putting your foot in the water there and then just jumping in and swimming with it and going with the flow and trusting that things are going to turn out okay. I think that's the big piece of it that's helping me is that I'm starting to trust that it will be okay.
Well, not only that, but you have to remember that it's just not like you're having a wonderful relationship and then, God forbid, something happens and your husband dies.
Right.
This is a long process of breaking you down, making you feel like you won't be happy without him,
like they can
try to convince you nobody will ever love you again, because
right.
If I don't love you, you're not lovable enough to have somebody love you.
Right.
You're leaving a marriage from a position of weakness. You're not even leaving from a position of strength. And that's why I think it's so hard for so many women. They feel so beaten down to start with. And I know for me, I just didn't feel like I had the confidence, because I felt all that confidence was knocked out of me when I was told I'm not a good enough wife, I'm not a good enough mother,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not capable of raising my children, I should be very lucky to have him there. And, you know, if you hear this day in and day out, you start believing it.
Right, right. And you have to deprogram that a little at a time, and it takes a lot of time, you know. But it's worth it. I mean, yeah, it's what's the alternative to stay in that and listen to that day in and day out and just get beaten down as a person and just living with it, just existing. That's how I felt. I was just existing.
Me too. I felt there was always a cloud over my head, a dark cloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never felt good on any morning I woke up.
No.
I never stood any night I was going to bed. And like that woman who wrote the book, Walking on Eggshells, that's how I always felt. I always felt that, you know, if I stepped on the wrong eggshell, everything was going to crack.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us feel that way when we're living in these marriages. And that's what I think starts the codependency. So I think if you can just recognize that and start realizing that you can make it on your own,
mm-hmm.
and you look at yourself before the marriage that you were making it on your own.
Right.
A lot of us lose that perspective, especially when you've been in a long-term marriage like you were in.
Mm-hmm.
That you remember that you had a whole life before you met your husband and you were surviving alone.
Right.
You didn't
That's
need
right.
a man to make you live, right?
I agree. I feel, I mean, I was on my own since I was 17,
mm-hmm.
not by choice. It just ended up that way. And I did have self-esteem issues, but I was stronger at that point. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's amazing to think about it now as the years went by. I think I was looking for someone to take me out of the situation I was in, to rescue
mm-hmm.
me. And sure enough, you know, someone came along, my, you know, soon-to-be ex-husband, and I was willing to sacrifice because I wanted that security, you know, and it ended up not working out so well for me, but I have to relearn how I was before, you know, gain my independence again, you know, and little by little, I feel a little bit stronger each day. It's, you know, you go through your tough times where you think you can't even lift your head out of the bed and you don't, you know, want to deal with it, and you cry a lot, and, you know, I've been through the weepy stage and all that stuff, and slowly, like I said, it's been getting a little better each day where I feel like, okay, you know, I had a happy day today. I had a little laughter today. You know, I'm giving myself permission to enjoy myself a little bit here and there and, you know, without a man, and that's fine. You know, I know I'm not ready right now, but hopefully eventually I will be, and then hopefully
and
the right person comes along.
And you'll be ready to meet a healthy man.
A healthy man would be very refreshing, Bonnie. I would love that. But I have to be healthy first.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm going to attract an unhealthy person again. And I definitely don't want to waste any more time with that. I just can't.
Exactly. And that's why I tell our women, you know, build yourself up. See what brought you to this point. And even if you didn't start at this point after being married for a number of years, you will get to that point of being down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to learn how to get up. You have to learn how to fight it and how not to make a mistake again. You know, that's a wonderful thing about life. You get extra chances.
Right.
I had a lot of bad relationships before the one I have now.
Mm-hmm.
And even the one I have now, you know, had some problems last month that we had to work through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 18 years, you know, there was all of a sudden a slip in the communication. And, you know, we really, you know, at this point had to really work on it to get it back, not only back to where it was, but better than ever.
Right.
But you know what? When you have someone who's workable, you can do that. But when
right.
you live in a situation that can't work, no matter how hard you try and no matter how much you change yourself, it's never going to work. Wouldn't you say so?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you just feel like you're banging your head on the wall. We went to therapy. The person's not being honest with themselves, first of all.
Uh-huh.
There's no way you can even fix anything. It's not fixable. You know, you after a while you realize that. You just say, wait a minute. You know, the guys keep telling you the same thing over and over again, and there's no change, and you know something's not kosher, and that's it. You know, you got to just get to that point where you say, I'm in a losing battle here, you know, and I'm losing myself and my sanity. So, you know, you have to make that choice and say, I don't want to deal with that anymore.
Right, because there's no way you can counsel gay away in a marriage counseling situation.
No. They'll try to say it's either asexual. They'll try to say, you know, it's this and that and the other thing. If the person's not being honest and it seems very one-sided, then and it's your word against them, and then it becomes a whole thing with that, you get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even look at the person anymore because you just say, this guy's not even telling the truth and not being honest, and then you look like you're losing your mind, and it's just not
right.
good.
Like I tell women, don't bother going for marriage counseling. You can go for divorce counseling.
Right.
You know, when you have children and you have to stay like semblance of a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but don't go to a marriage counselor thinking you're going to keep a marriage intact.
No.
You're just going to be wasting time and money for something that's just never going to happen. I have this happening. So many women come to me and they tell me they're going for marriage counseling and still not working. And I tell them, tell the therapist you're not coming back because it's not going to work.
Right.
You can't make something work that's not meant to work.
That's exactly. Yeah. The thing that you have to do is just come to the conclusion that it's not going to work. You have to really just, you know, understand that. And it takes time, but you, once you've been through it for a while and you see nothing's changing, you got to say, well, why is it not changing? You know, it's not from you. It's the other person. You can't change that. It's gonna stay that way. That's the way they are, and that's the end of it. You know, you kind of just have to accept that, which is, it's hard, because you don't. Then, with accepting it, you have to change your life, and that's the hard part.
Exactly, and I think that's where women are scared.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're the one who has to change. If
right.
not him, he can't change. And
right.
that's what I tell women. Don't look for. You know, if you're hanging around waiting for him to change, that's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be willing to make the change, to stand up for yourself, to take your life back, and to say, I don't want to live like this anymore. Because I say that every day you lose, you can never get back. It's gone.
It's gone.
And you don't know what kind of lifespan you're going to have. Some women can live a long life. Others, their lives are going to be shortened. And, you know, look how much time you lose just trying to mentally juggle everything that's still never going to work.
Yeah, I feel bad for the timeless, but I said, you know what? I have to get over that. It's gone.
Right.
It's been 15 years. It's a long time, but you know what? It's gone. And then the thing that counts right now is my future. You know, I'm not going to have another day of that, which is good. It's a blessing, you know. So I have to just keep looking at it that way and forget the past. So what I have to do is just say, you know, I have to learn my lessons now and say, okay, this is what happened, figure out why it happened, and then just go from there, because I can't get that time back.
And I think that, you know, as you're saying, you can't look back and regret what you had. You have to look ahead and say, you know what, this is day one of the rest of my future and the rest of my life, and I'm going to lead it being mentally sound and healthy and try to work things through so I can have what I didn't have for the last 15 years. But, you know, I deserve better, and I'm going to get better.
Right.
But I think what you say is wonderful, Donna. You can't sit and kick yourself because you lost 15 years.
No, then that would put me in depression again, you know. It's not not healthy. It's not going to help me.
Mm-mm. Well, you know what? I know in a year from now, you're going to be in such a different place. And
yeah.
I know that soulmate is out there waiting for you.
I feel that. I definitely, you know, before I didn't, because I wasn't feeling good about myself. And, you know, I'm just trying to take care of myself, doing what I have to do, and building myself up. And, you know, again, like I said before, I didn't feel that way because I was dealing with all the other crap. And I said, oh, you know, I'll never find anybody. I'm not worthy. I'm this and I'm that. And because of what they tell you to. And then after you get out of that situation, then you start to see, you know, some reality and say, you know, God, you know, I'm not a bad person. You know, I'm a good person. I, you know, do what I can, and I'm good enough. And that's, I think, what you have to come down to is, you know, you deserve better. You don't deserve to be treated like that. You know, that's not fair. And that's not what is supposed to happen.
And I think that, you know, all I would like to say as we end the show tonight, first of all, thank you so much, Donna, for your beautiful insight.
My pleasure. I hope, you know, someone could hear that and maybe find some kind of strength and courage. And I appreciate you because you really helped me a lot along my journey, and I know, you know, it's just been a tremendous help to hear other stories and to have your support, and I just truly thank you for that.
Oh, well, you know, I'm going to be there until I come to your next wedding.
Uh-huh.
But I can even sing at your wedding.
Oh, do you sing?
Not really well, but I like to.
That's okay. I'll give you the mic. That's okay.
It's about me now, Donna, not about anybody else. Yeah, I sing great. No, I'm only kidding. But I do run a glee club here for people with bad voices.
then that'll be my pleasure. It'll be a treat.
Well, thank you so much. And never forget this, Donna. I'm telling you from the bottom of my heart, having been in touch with you for a while and having the wonderful pleasure of meeting you, you are such a winner. You are top of the line in every possible way.
Oh, Bonnie, thank you.
Me.
And so are you. I feel, you know, you're amazing, and you just really have been a blessing to so many people, including myself, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, sweetie. No, I love you.
I love you
and
too, Bonnie.
And we all wish that she's going to feel better by next week, and we'll be back
mm-hmm.
again. And thank you again, Donna. Love you.
All right. Love you too, Bonnie. Have a good night.
You too.
All right,
and
bye-bye.
And all of our listening audience, we'll be back with you again next week. Love to you all on behalf of me and Misty. And we'll be talking next week again at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the Straight Wives Show. Good night.